Season 4, Episode 19, Bad Rap. It starts with Simone and Sipowicz heading to a hospital early in the morning. They meet up with uniform cop Shannon, who runs down that a rapper named Daddy Cool was...
That's how you know, like, that's how you know this is written by a bunch of white guys in the 90s.
Because the name's Daddy Cool.
Yeah, because that's like Big Daddy Kane. Like, that's really old. That's like an 80s rap name.
And no
hip young black kid who raps is calling himself Daddy Cool.
Because I was going to ask that, because I don't know much about the rap game. I'm not in the rap game myself. But it doesn't seem like a very intimidating or cool rap name at all.
Okay, don't worry, there's practice every Tuesday.
There is?
Your game could get better.
Okay, well, good. I need to get in there.
I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of stupid names now, so, I mean, it could be a name now.
Yeah, rappers' names now.
The world's weird.
Yeah, people's names are getting ridiculous, so I don't really notice how insane they are, except on this show. Because the way he explains it, he's like, it's Daddy Cool like Kool-Aid, which is like, I don't think he wants that comparison to the big giant Kool-Aid man.
That makes total sense, because it's spelled K-O-O-L.
Yeah, he says, yeah, like Kool-Aid.
And maybe it's, like, specific, because he likes Kool-Aid.
He's just, that's his big thing.
Or do you think it's the white writers making, like, a racist stereotype?
It could be both. Well, this episode, I mean,
he doesn't say purple Kool-Aid. He says Kool-Aid.
Well, he doesn't call it purple drink, Kyle, so I don't think... The thing I would say that's this episode is almost like a less aggressive version of the Backboard Jungle, where Sipowicz has a run-in with a black character and issues of his possible racism come up, but it's not as intense as when he says the N-word.
Yeah, I kind of felt like, I feel like this episode is like an attempt to try to like put him in scenarios where his racism could come up, but he's able to kind of somewhat rise above it to kind of show that maybe he's taking new steps, you know? I don't know.
As the beginning goes on, because we haven't gotten that far, they run it down with Shannon, and then they go into his private room because I guess the ER was a zoo because people were noticing this rapper was there. And there's just a nurse taking a picture with him. And
yeah, like Santa Claus style.
And they bust it up, and Sipowicz, because there's a lot of Sipowicz lines that are pretty funny, he says, get out of here, young lady, or you're going to hear some profane language. You had your Kodak moment. And there's this guy, Boo, who's his bodyguard, I guess. When they start asking him questions about the robbery and whatnot, he says, Boo, the TV's broken.
Oh, he's being a total dick.
Yeah, he's being an asshole. He's being very disrespectful. He says to Boo, the TV don't work, and they just keep asking again, did you see something? And he's like, did you see something, Boo? And he goes, nope. And he's like, that's a pretty big word there, Boo. You feel like you need to sit down? Then when they're getting more disrespectful, Sipowicz implies...
Sipowicz doesn't help himself.
No, not at all. He implies that he was a coward and said you were doing the Heisman, like you were scared of being shot.
Yeah.
While Boo was hiding. And the gentleman says that he could, that Sipowicz can kiss his black ass. And Sipowicz responds with, try wiping it sometime, you're going to find out that thing is really red.
Monkey reference, but he's not racist.
See, that's the thing I thought. Was like, is he just calling him a baboon? Because that's pretty fucking racist. It's a racist thing to say.
Kirk, he's not. It's not a question of is he. He did call him a monkey.
when he gets,
he just found a creative way to do it.
He did it. Like, he did it with the power of
that's
words.
That's why he's racist.
As he walks out, he says 45 minutes sleep, and then I got to take this abuse. Daddy Cool's manager shows up, Nathan D, and Sipowicz immediately starts insulting him because why not? The full line is: if you're looking for Boo, he's in trying out for a new career in TV repair, and that's a stupid bow tie.
Comes at him pretty hard for no reason.
Simone even responds with, good that you went and pissed this guy off too, and Sipowicz is just like, oh, this nation's doom, and that's the end of the beginning of the episode. It's the end of the opening. Sipowicz just pisses off everybody involved with the investigation.
he's not racist, though.
This is NYPD Blue Balls, where I, Kirk, and the other voice, Kyle, go through every single episode of NYPD Blue, and this is the theme song to NYPD Blue. Alright, continuing with the Sipowicz and Simone storyline, and we'll get back to what else is going on. They come back to the house, and we see Vince Scatelli. And I wanted to give him his props, because he did die recently. He died in May, at like 90-something years old.
Character or the person?
The person.
It's a joke.
I didn't even notice. Carmine Caridi.
Carmine Falcone?
No, Carmine Caridi. It's not the DC Universe.
Okay.
He was in Godfather 1 and 2 and The Money Pit, so he did do some other shit. But Vince Scatelli is there, and Sipowicz takes a moment to jab at them for not picking up the shooting, because he's wondering why Night Shift was too busy to do it. Vince lets him know they had a double homicide and a shooting outside on the street that he didn't put together is the same exact shooting that they're looking into now.
Yeah, Vince is kind of an idiot. Vince is a big old dum-dum.
And he lets him know, I got a sausage guy in the interrogation room who I can put the squeeze on because he doesn't have a food handling permit, but he's not telling me dick. A guy named Lorenzo Sharp.
Vince Catelli's like that really dumb coworker of yours who always tries to like tell you his ideas and you don't want to listen to him, but you have to deal with it.
Yeah, I agree. I was going to ask, you know what, I'm going to ask it next episode, but I guess this is a teaser about Vince Catelli that I never thought of until we started watching these back-to-back, but there's something about Vince Catelli that I got to ask when we get to the next episode, but just stick tight for that.
Hold on to your horses.
Yeah, get on your fucking seatbelts, listeners. So... Vince takes this moment because it's clear that Simone and Sipowicz are pretty annoyed that he didn't put this together and he's not like doing a good job. So he takes this moment to say, I got health problems. I took a heart stress test and it didn't come back with good results. And I'm having heart issues. They give him some sympathy. And as they walk away, Sipowicz says, shows you can be stupid and have bad health.
I don't know what that means.
It's just Sipowicz. I've determined that Sipowicz is just a, like, super bitch because he didn't get enough sleep.
If Sipowicz was alive today, he would be, like, a blogger on 4chan. Like, always nagging everybody.
Ooh.
Just, like, creating bullshit up and just talking shit. I feel like that's what he would be doing.
Oh, man. Sipowicz 15th, 69. On 4chan. Well, I think it's all anonymous, so he wouldn't have a screen name. They go
he
in on...
He would definitely be a MAGA dude.
Oh, yeah, probably. Well, he would be for the first term. I think he might be smart enough to not be a second term.
Until his taxes go up.
They go in on this Lorenzo guy, who... I don't like to do this often, but I don't think he was a very good actor. I don't think he did a good job.
Being
a scared sausage guy.
Yeah, he was not.
Because he's like, man, I don't want any trouble, man. Just, I don't want any trouble. And then, like, Sipowicz just gets a little bit angry with him. And then he's like, okay, I got a license plate. And gives it to them. Because he doesn't have a description of the guy. And then when Simone says, hey, we're going to give you some money to help out with the lost sausage. He goes like, okay, cool. And gives, like, a thumbs up. And then won't turn his back on Sipowicz as he leaves. And I'm just like, I don't like this dude. I didn't like what he did.
Yeah, they have some stinkers sometimes. Not everybody can be, you know, Simone every day.
And there's some really good actors in this one, at least in my opinion. So it was like, it only highlighted how bad that dude was.
Highlight, like a highlighter.
After he leaves, Sipowicz makes another crack that Daddy Cool will come around because Simone's going to relate to him and we're just going to let him, insult Sipowicz. So when they come back to Sipowicz and Simone, Sipowicz started falling asleep at his desk. Simone wakes him up to let him know that Daddy Cool has a clean record except for a probation in Buffalo, possible probation violation. Only his manager shows up, Mr. Nathan D., and Sipowicz, of course, responds with, "Scumbag sends his manager." It comes out that the reason...
Yeah, but that's a rich person move. I feel like most rich people would do that. You know what I mean?
And I think that's something that Sipowicz would have called out even if the guy was white. Would have been like, asshole only sends his manager, he doesn't come himself.
Yeah, he makes comments like that when like only someone's lawyer shows up, you know, and not them. Shit like that. So yeah, that shit happens.
It becomes a quick, heated argument because... Nathan explains that his client, Anthony, or Daddy Cool, has issues with the police.
Yeah, doesn't trust them.
Doesn't trust the police because his uncle was in a police-related incident, and he was in trouble with them in Compton. Sipowicz only antagonizes him by saying, oh, what, he was going to choir practice? This argument is really nuts because... When the guy starts yelling back at Sipowicz, he reminds him, like, I haven't been disrespectful to you. I'm just letting you know what my client will and will not do.
Yeah.
He didn't come in and be like, you guys can go fuck yourselves. He's never going to talk to you. He's like, he wants to figure out what's going to happen with him and what he can and can't do and will not do. And Sipowicz just antagonizes him.
And that makes Sipowicz look bad a little bit.
Yeah, because Sipowicz makes, like, a crack, like, oh, you just want to create, like, a... rat beef so he sells more records. And he's like, no, he just has a problem with police because they killed his uncle, and they've been hassling him in Compton. And then Sipowicz is like, well, maybe we just let it slip that he offered the shooter a hand job, which is like, what? What does that have to do with anything? So the guy gets upset and everybody gets shouty, and then eventually calms down when he says he won't pick out any mug books and won't look at anything. Until Simone lets him know we'll violate his parole in Buffalo if he doesn't want to cooperate.
I think that's part of your parole.
You have to cooperate with the police.
Yeah, like, yeah, and you can't, like, associate yourself with known criminals, shit like that.
The guy then says he'll be by in about an hour and a half, and for some weird reason Sipowicz says, with them that's 2 hours and 15 minutes. Why did you take that moment to say that? Seemed like there's no reason.
Yeah, and what does he mean by them? Like, is it racist? Is it rappers?
Is it rich rappers? Is it,
you know, men?
Is it bow tie wearers?
Yeah, like, what is it? Like, like, there's a lot of people who are late all the time.
Who is the them that you're referring to?
Yeah, obviously black people.
Mr. Cool comes in and...
Mr. Cool.
Mr. Cool comes in sunglasses... And pisses off Sipowicz.
Of course, it has to match his persona.
And Sipowicz can tell that he saw the guy in the arrays, but didn't want to point him out. And when Sipowicz says something, the guy gives him a hand. One of these, you can leave now hands.
Sipowicz ain't getting dismissed by no black kid. Hell no.
So he starts insulting him, calls him gutless. They start yelling back and forth.
I feel like gutless is a word we don't really hear much anymore.
No, I mean, I don't. It's pretty...
I feel like that's more like a western-y word, you know?
It's an old...
Gutless.
Yeah, it's an old-time... It's an old-timey insult for coward.
Gutless, yellow-bellied dog.
Yeah, it's a very much a mad dog Tannen type word. They start
down
going...
Down here rustling the sheet.
They go back and forth at each other. And what's really awkward is, in the middle of a police station, this guy says, catch you on the street, I'll cut your throat.
Yeah.
So, doesn't seem
kinda
very smart.
Kind of stupid.
Kind of not a smart thing to do.
Kind of a dumb move. And a way too aggressive move. He went from 1 to 11 really quickly.
Sipowicz responds, you catch me on the street, you're going to wish you were never born. And
that's a dad response.
That is a dad response. And then Mr. Cool holds up his cane and said, let's go, pig. So then they're going to fight each other. They get separated and pulled out. They scream at each other, and Sipowicz says he just wants to make a buck off this. Fancy says, let it go, Sipowicz. Then the guy said, not everything's about money. Not everybody thinks like you, and starts laughing. And Sipowicz says, that's why I'm on the job. Enormous financial benefits.
He always, like, jokes about that. Because some, like, I think later in episodes people talk about, like, he talks about being, like, who he works for. Like, he doesn't work for the money, he works for the city of New York.
And they don't make a whole, they don't make a ton of money.
Yeah, cops aren't rolling in the dough, you know what I mean?
So he's like, not
Greg
doing...
Greg Medavoy can't even afford an apartment.
When everything gets cleared out, Simone... There is a moment where Simone kind of covers for Sipowicz on what he said, saying that was the victim of the shooting. He's not cooperating. So Fancy kind of just leaves, and Sipowicz gets angrier and says, we're going to have to stay up all night to look after this dude's car, assuming that his friend's going to show up in it. They go on this sleepy stakeout where Sipowicz is, like, barely keeping his eyes open. He's getting pissy at everything, where he's like, that guy knew who it was, those lion eyes. And then some dudes come out of a liquor store, and he says, these idiots, they should be at home in bed. And then he starts laughing. He just starts, like, chuckling to himself, and Simone's like, what's the problem? And he says, it's just striking me funny that I'm so tired.
Yeah, it's like when you do the sleepover with your friends and you stay up all night.
When they go to pick up the dudes, Sipowicz just starts laughing and asking them random-ass questions. It's almost like, it feels like maybe Sipowicz or Dennis Franz was like, I want to do another scene where I act drunk, but I don't actually get drunk, because I'm supposed to be sober. So what if I'm just really tired? And I'm just chuckly and weird. Because he says, what's your name? Favorite day of the week? What's your favorite ice cream? Who's the fifth president? Who's the sixth president? And then, like, he randomly sees somebody walking down the street, and he goes, hey, how you doing? And it's like, okay, so what the hell's up with that?
This episode's a little loopy with the acting choices that people make.
They bring in...
I think maybe it was also, like, supposed to show... Not really. I was going to say it's maybe supposed to show his, like, transformation on something, but he doesn't really change his, like, ideas of anything, really.
No. It seems like he's just super frustrated because he's tired, and then he gets to the point of tired where it's just like, everything's hilarious, ha-ha! When they bring Jermaine and his buddy Crow into the house, Jermaine is just going to lawyer up. He just keeps repeating the word lawyer.
Those are interesting character choices. Like, how many people in the world named Jermaine have a friend named Crow?
I don't know.
Jermaine is such a unique nickname anyways. Like, how did Jermaine find Crow?
I mean, people meet in different places, and Jermaine...
It is New York, there's a lot of weirdos here. So...
Jermaine keeps saying lawyer, and what was really funny is Sipowicz is basically falling asleep in the interrogation room, and he says, the ballistics match your gun, and Jermaine says, your office isn't even open yet. And then Sipowicz goes, oh, that's a good point. Like, basically, like, yeah, you caught me in a lie. I'm not even going to pretend. Like, yep, I'm lying. They go at Crow, who actually owns the car. Sipowicz just flat out lies and says, we know Jermaine's been paying you $150 a night to rent his car, and looks at Simone, and Simone clearly on his face is like, well, this is an interesting lie, but they still go forward with it.
Simone does that a couple times, but Medavoy does it a couple times. Like, so many cops, what NYPD Blue has shown, just blatantly lie about information. I think you've brought this up, too.
Yeah, they'll just straight up lie.
Just straight up lie about information, or just, like...
But what's even better is... Sipowicz comes up with a straight-up lie, doesn't talk about it before they get in the room with Simone, and then you can see on Simone's face, like, oh, he didn't say that. Like, you can, like, at least a couple seconds, Simone is, like, not aware that Sipowicz is gonna do this play. So if you're the guy in the interrogation room and you saw that on his face, you'd be like, no, he didn't. I could tell, because he just gave you a face when you said that. It was pretty bad, but...
Yeah, but is that guy...
smart enough?
Not just smart enough, but is that guy really paying that much attention?
Yeah, he probably was looking down.
To that guy's face, you know what I mean? Like, is he paying attention to that?
I mean, and it works out because the guy's like, he only paid me $100 a night to use it. So they already got the guys, or the guy that's
which,
doing
why
it.
Would you, which, why would you give them any information?
You know? I don't know.
From the South now, Kirk?
I am.
South?
I'm from the dirty South. But
I don't know.
Simone and Sibblets have to go back at Mr. Cool to get him to ID the shooter. And
ID that shooter.
So, Sibblets, before he goes in, he says, I think I should recuse myself, me being half punchy, zero tolerance. They're liable to ask me what the time is. I'll hit him with a board. So they get in there, and the manager and Mr. Daddy Cool are upset because they already violated the parole because they said he wasn't being cooperative.
You were very enthusiastic about that cooperative.
Nathan D. pulls out a tape recorder. He's like, I want it on tape that he's helping you guys out so that there's no question.
Hell of a smart dude. He's probably dealt with a lot of police rooms, so that's a hell of a smart move on his part.
And then after that, Simone,
I got no problems with it.
Simone straight up lies about why Sipowicz is recusing himself. He's like, my partner here is recusing himself because of the animosity between you two and the antagonism. But he's understanding that you've had issues with cops in the past because of your neighborhood. He was beaten up in the project and his dad lost an eye. He doesn't want bad things to continue to happen because of this issue with this rap star. Sipowicz only comes in to add to it by saying, and we're going to violate your parole if you're not going to fucking shape up and get your shit together.
What if that was him, like, just subconsciously acting out, you know?
Who's subconsciously acting out?
Sipowicz. Like, maybe he really wanted to help, but then when he, like, heard saying all that shit, he just, like, really bugged him, and so he had to, like, say that snarky comment, you know?
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. It's very much a stubborn person and stubborn person fighting about something stupid.
Yeah.
So it's like, because then Sipowicz even makes the point, like, these are black-on-black crimes, which means this isn't, and it isn't about, like, people feuding. It's about people getting hurt and being robbed, and we want to put a stop to it. And he's like, so that, with that Tupac Shakur and that conspicuous B.I.G.?
Conspicuous, yeah.
That's
like something Dad would say.
And what's great is the guy looks at the photos.
Kirk, do you know what conspicuous means?
I do not remember, no.
You don't know, neither do I. Well, what the fuck is, like, Sipowicz thinking of the word conspicuous?
I know there's conspicuous, maybe it's the same thing and he just pronounced it differently.
Well, he does pronounce prostate wrong.
Let me see, conspicuous. It's actually better than notorious. It means standing out so you can be clearly visible, attracting a notice or attention.
Oh, interesting.
So it's not even worse than notorious. It's actually nicer than.
Wait, repeat what you just said. What it is?
It's standing out so as to be clearly visible or attracting notice or attention.
It's kind of another way to say notorious.
But notorious has a negative context.
Yeah, it's just maybe a more positive way. Yeah, you're right. Okay, anyways, moving on.
They use him picking out a picture to ask for a lineup, and they kind of seem betrayed, but then kind of just go with it and pick out the guy, and that's the end of their story. There was a weird moment where Simone and the manager are talking in the hallway, where the manager's like, this is going to be one of the few nights that I don't have to worry about him ending up dead. And he's like, so long, man. Like, so long, and then he just leaves. It was very weird.
I thought it was a pretty interesting conversation. You kind of get to see that the manager does a lot more for him. Like, granted, like, everything that was going on with this, like, there was a lot of bullshit. There's a lot of, like, not being able to get along with cops and not being able to, like, feeling comfortable with them. And then on the cop side, that supports his racist.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you don't really know that the manager, like, basically is keeping this kid alive because he's crazy. You know what I mean? It just kind of adds to the character.
I would say it does kind of dimensionalize the characters of, because most of the time characters like this rapper or this manager are just like, okay, they don't want to deal with police because they're being hard-headed. When in this one, it's like, no, they were provoked. They were dicks in the beginning, but they were provoked by Sipowicz, and then when they come back and try to help Sipowicz, it makes it worse, and then it just becomes harder and harder to get it together. So, that's also mirrored by another story that's happening, but with Fancy and good old Szymanski, Fancy Szymanski. Fancy comes into the house one day and he sees Martens from IAB, aka the Rat Squad, with Szymanski and a black cop, which usually means some shit has gone down.
Some racist shit has gone down.
Well, it turns out a drug dealer has accused Szymanski of stealing $600 from him when they picked him up on the street. And the black cop that's with him was taking care of the car, so he cannot speak for him. And Martens lets Fancy know that he's not looking very guilty based on the story, but he is looking guilty because he's being a dick about it and refusing to give a statement and let them check his car.
He's not complying whatsoever.
When Fancy asks what's going on, what is he saying is happening? And he said, well, he's saying that it's the black cop, the dealer, and you, Fancy, conspiring against him. Martens is not aware that Fancy was pulled over by Szymanski. He doesn't know the pullover story.
And that he got him transferred into the precinct as a vendetta.
So he doesn't... I guess Szymanski isn't explaining that part. He's just saying, it's Fancy that's doing it. It's conspiracy. I'm not talking about shit. You need to go talk to these guys because they're fucking with me. Rather than explaining what he thinks is happening for them to investigate that. So he's being a complete idiot. After Martens runs down what he thinks is happening, saying that Szymanski's only making it worse for himself, Fancy asks if he can talk to Szymanski, and Szymanski is a straight dick to Fancy, even though all he seems to do is ask things that would probably help him.
He's trying to help him and trying to help him get out of the situation he's in.
Fancy tries to talk to him, and he's like, so you think I did this? He's like, my whole world's been upside down since I pulled you over, and now this happens? I don't think it's a coincidence. He comes out of the room. Martens saw the whole thing. And he says, can I talk to the other cop? And there's a cool moment where Martens is like, oh, do you want to come work with us? And just the look on Fancy's face of like, fuck that. Everybody hates you guys.
I mean, he's doing the job of an IAB agent, but whatever.
He is doing their job better than they are. Luis Jones is his partner, who was the cop that was taking care of the car when the dealer supposedly was robbed. He's being very nice and cordial with Fancy. He gives up that the drug dealer is named Clive Bell. And he said, like, basically Fancy asked him, do you think he did it? And he said, no, I don't. But I'm not going to put my badge on the line for a guy that thinks I'm up in a conspiracy against him. So I'm not going to help him in any way.
That's fair enough. I mean, I can't argue that.
Then there was a moment, because I guess Szymanski had told him about the pullover, because the black cop brings it up, and he said, I can't really blame you for what you did, it only happened to me 80 or 90 times. I would imagine that other black cops and black folk would be like, yeah, transfer his ass to a harder precinct to deal with if he's going to be an asshole.
Because they're, like, constantly getting pulled over even though they are cops.
Fancy goes to visit the drug dealer because it turns out he does actually know who that drug dealer is.
Yeah, that's what kind of gets interesting about the story, and also, like, is life that coincidental? You know what I mean?
What's also interesting is this. I think this guy was actually a really good actor, the guy that played Clive Bell.
Yeah.
As he's talking to Arthur, you can tell he respects him, even though he's a drug dealer and Arthur's a cop, where he's like, I knew you had big plans, I knew you were going to be somewhere, I knew you were going to be somebody. And Arthur is like, hey man, well, you better change your story, because they're sticking together and they're going to give you 20 years for this. But the guy freely admits, yeah, I just lied about the money so I can get money for my teeth. And he's like, well, you better pull back the complaint, because they're going to come at you hard for this, because they're It's another moment where he just straight up lies to him. Like, another cop lies to a criminal.
They're constantly lying to them.
And then, when he comes back to the gate and then goes out, he sees Martens. And Martens is kind of frustrated and confused. Martens now is suspicious, saying like, oh, so you do know the drug dealer, and you went to talk to him without telling me. This looks incredibly suspicious. And Fancy says, I think he's going to withdraw his complaint on Szymanski now. Which I think is even more suspicious.
Yeah, because it seems like he intimidated him.
And if I'm IAB, I'm dealing with this crazy dickhead cop who says, oh, it's all a conspiracy. Fancy's in on it. This guy's in on it. Everybody's trying to come at me. And then the guy who would be the head of this conspiracy, the guy in charge, ends up meeting with one of the guys you didn't think were related.
Yeah.
And suddenly now the story changes. That's like an immediate red flag.
Well, he's like fucking talking to everybody. Like, he knows everybody involved with everything. He's a lieutenant of a detective squad. Like, he has his own shit to deal with. Why is he solving crimes?
Well, he's a cop. He still has to solve crimes, but...
But that's not what his job is anymore. His job is to manage the people that do that. Like, he fucking turned into, like, Inspector Gadget and shit, and was, like, trying to figure shit out.
That's
not your job.
There is one quote that I wrote down from Clive Bell that was really interesting, where he said, "You're so deep into knowing human nature, Arthur. How come that don't make you use dope?" I don't know why.
Because that's like an extreme.
But I think what he's saying is like you're a real sympathetic guy and you're really in tune with the struggles of being human. Why don't you use something to mask that?
I took it completely different.
How did you take it?
I took it as like you know how shitty people are and how fucked up this world is. Why don't you do drugs?
I mean, it's kind of both, I guess. It was a very poetic thing for the druggie whose teeth are fake and who's... he has such a rich backstory because even Fancy's like, why didn't you leave when the other guys left? He's like, I haven't run in 10 years. The feet don't work anymore. And it's just like so weird. And Szymanski comes by Fancy's office and... is still playing victim and saying, yeah, those charges are dropped, but I still have to look over both shoulders because you're going to come at me again.
Szymanski is a definite 4chan blogger.
Oh,
definitely.
Szymanski is, because of this situation, like, Szymanski was buying a tiki torch real quick.
Oh, like, when you could, Szymanski was curating a racist Reddit page. Like, he was running, like, the MAGA Forever Reddit page before Reddit said you can't do that shit anymore.
And his name was...
So now he just runs it on Facebook.
Now his name was Szymanski the Mansky, and...
Szymanski the only Mansky.
He's being bullheaded and an asshole. Fancy's trying to explain to him, like, I didn't do this. And you're only hurting yourself by acting this way, because you're still going to get in trouble with IAB. He said, yeah, well, now this makes you look better that you solved it for me. Now they would never suspect that you did something like this. And he goes, yeah, and I killed Kennedy. And then the other guy's like, yeah, well, I killed Martin Luther King.
Yeah, that was a weird one-upsmanship.
and then Fancy's like, hey, man, that wasn't about race. It was about conspiracy. It was kind of funny to see, like, the reaction of, like, hey, that wasn't about race, man. Like, calm the fuck down.
Well, it's so weird because it's like Szymanski, like, lives in race.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a white dude, you know what I mean?
And it's a pretty interesting conversation that happens after that because Fancy says, this wasn't about race, and Szymanski's like, it's always about race. That's why you had me transfer here. And he goes, okay, fine. Let's say there's a little bit of truth to that. And let's say that there was also truth to... There's more about you pulling me over that night than just a regular traffic stop. Let's start there and end it there. And he's like, oh, it's not over. He's like, it has to end somewhere.
Yeah, but that whole conversation basically leads to, like, hey, let's just leave it at that. You're racist. You don't like me. And, you know, fuck it. Like, that's kind of basically what they come down to.
Because Shemansky makes the great point of, it's not just that you transfer me, it's you transfer me to where I'm under your thumb all the time. Like, you have to see me come in and be a worker ant while you're at the top of the ant pile. And
he kind of made it personal, yeah.
And he's what's cool is Fancy's like, okay, I'll give you that. Maybe I didn't consider that, and I kind of like that about it. However, I didn't plan this conspiracy against you. I didn't do this to hurt you. And I know you're innocent, and you know you're innocent. Tell IAB that, or else you're going to get in fucking trouble.
But then there's that little moment after he says all of that, where then he slyly tries to slide in there. I mean, it is a coincidence that I knew this drug dealer.
Yeah, the fact he said that is the worst thing.
He tries to slide it, like, right in, like it's not that big a deal.
It's also...
That was kind of funny, too.
It would have turned sinister if he's like, and I know a lot of other black drug dealers out there. The fact that he said, and it turns out I did know that drug dealer, is like, I don't know why he even said that. He shouldn't have said that at all. That shouldn't have been a part of it.
But, I know, but I think that is more of, like, who Fancy is as a person. Mm-hmm. Because Fancy is like going to tell you everything. He didn't want Shemansky to find out later that he knew who that person was.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
He would have rather it come from him, and that's how he finds out, that's how he knows, and then he can nip it in the bud right away and say, like I wasn't coming after you. You know what I mean?
I like how that conversation does end because Shemansky kind of realizes, I think he realizes, maybe we don't like each other, and we both have admitted... Because at the end, he admits, like, it wasn't... When I pulled you over, you are right about when I pulled you over, but not 100%. He then agrees to talk to IAB, and I think he's saying, okay, you admitted some wrongdoing, I admitted some wrongdoing, you're saying you didn't do this, and even if you did, me being an asshole is only going to get me fired... When you just went through all this rigmarole to prove that I didn't do anything, so I might as well just say I didn't do anything and get it over with, and just deal with what consequences could be. So, I liked how that ending kind of is, because it's like, oh, no one solved anything. They just both admitted we both did some shitty things, because we could. Anyway, we got one more story. It has to do with... Well, two more stories, but it has to do with Metavoy semen, and it's kind of hilarious, because after we get back from the beginning title sequence, Abby comes down, who is Paige Turco from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, Secret of the Ooze, and 3, Turtles in Time. She sees Metavoy on the Stairmaster, and there's a passive-aggressive back and forth, because... He hasn't come to see the lesbians recently.
He hasn't made his lesbian house call.
She says, you were threatening to make us dinner. And he says, well, all these steps you have to this request are making me eat peanut butter, which is making me work out more. It's all your fault, you dirty lesbians. Like, it's really weird. There's so much, like, weird passive aggression on what they're saying. Because she's like, well, you're supposed to, you know, make us dinner. And he's like, yeah, well, you're supposed to ask me what's going on and not pussyfoot around it.
Jesus Christ.
Well, no, it's...
You've got some feelings about this, I see.
Well, no, it's... It seemed... Like, because I watched it two times.
Jesus Christ, man.
I watched the episode twice, and it's so weird how she comes down and she goes, hey, what's going on? He's like, I gotta work out. I'm eating too much peanut butter. And she was like, okay. He's like, well, say hi to your girlfriend for me. And she's like, why don't you say it yourself? You're supposed to make us some food. And he's like, look, bitch, I'm eating the peanut butter and getting fat because you're stressing me out with all these weird things. I don't know what's going on.
So I got it, man. I'm with you.
So she just...
I'm on your team.
So she rolls up to him and she goes, hey, man, I want your sperm to have a baby. And...
Yeah, she wants that sperm.
And Greg freaks the fuck out. Like, he's like, oh, I thought this is what this was. I gotta go.
Would you freak out if, like, someone asked you for your sperm?
I wouldn't freak out, but I would definitely ask for some time to think about it. That's the question I was going to ask you, which is kind of going to be the running theme for the next two episodes. Do you freak out when someone asks for your sperm?
I don't think I'd give a shit.
I would have to consider it.
I mean, yeah, I would have to think about it and, like, process it, but my immediate thought is, like, who cares?
I have to consider the ramifications of having a child that I have nothing to do with, or a child that I have something to do with but isn't mine. There's a lot of things I would have to consider before saying yes. And I think it would be awkward to be like, let me think about it and let's work out together. But I also wouldn't be like, okay, I gotta go. I got something to do upstairs. Leave me alone. Like, I wouldn't turn into a robot. It would just be, I need to think about this. It's kind of an odd request.
No, I agree with that, but at the same time, like, let's say if Greg gives him the sperm,
mm-hmm.
I don't think Greg's gonna be, like, best friends with them, you know what I mean?
And that's the thing.
I feel like if I was to give my sperm to somebody, or if someone was, like, to ask me for my sperm, it would be somebody that I'm, like, not that super close with.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like if I was to give it, it would have to be with somebody that I probably wouldn't see all the time. You know, like, if Danny and his wife were like, hey, we can't have kids, but what we want to do is take your sperm and mix it with something, or whatever, like, some weird shit like that. I would be like, nah, dude, because I would see your kid every day, or not every day, but a lot. And then when your kid would be like, you'd have to tell your kid at some point that,
hey, you know Uncle Kyle? You know, that's your dad.
Yeah, hey, you know, like, Kyle who's here all the time? Yeah, that's your real dad. Like, I don't want to, like, fuck up a kid. But if it was someone that I, like, if it was, like, someone at work who was like, hey, me and my lesbian, we're lesbians, we can't have kids, but we like your personality, we'd like to use your sperm.
We see you as a physical specimen, as a golden god.
Yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah, as a golden god, as a Dennis.
A D. Reynolds.
A D. Reynolds. But, like, no, if, like, I don't think I'd care, because then I wouldn't see them all the time, and then I don't think it would, like, really fuck up the kid. And then if the kid ever came to me and was like, hey, why did you do what you did? I'd be like, well, because, like, they wanted a family, so who cares?
So, you know what I mean? Well, it's the next scene with Medavoy. He's just pounding peanut butter by a window, and Martinez comes in to get coffee. And
he's such a bitch, dude.
And he tells Martinez, he's like, "Oh, I found out what they wanted. They want me to donate sperm." And Martinez was like, "I've never heard it called that before." And he's like, well, there's a lot to think about, and I don't know if I could do it. He's like, what's hard about doing this? And he does, like, a fist thing, which I guess means fucking. And, like, I've never seen someone describe sex as, like a fist pound. But he says, no, James, not that. They want me to... what did he say? It's so stupid what he says. They want me to give my sperm in an outer body experience, which is not the way to describe what they're doing.
No, not at all. Like, outer body means, like extraterrestrial shit.
Or, like astral projection.
Or, like, he did, like, mushrooms, and he's watching himself have sex with them.
That made it sound like he wants to do some meditation, do some real deep reflective shit, and then jerk off into her vagina, I guess. But
it would be, what he's describing is, like, the opening scene of Ace Ventura 2, when he's with the monks.
Yep.
And he, like, travels and to talk to somebody, and he's, like, a floating entity. If that's what would it be if Medavoy was that, having sex with him.
Not to out nerd cred you, but that's not at the beginning of the movie. It's about two-thirds of the way through.
Later on, because he can't fucking meditate in the beginning because he's just a weird white guy living in the mountains and shit.
Look, Kyle, Ace Ventura 2, When Nature Calls, deserves to be analyzed properly, as it is a great film. After rewatching it, it's not as good as the first one.
Yeah, except when we were little, we watched it all the fucking time, so it must not have sucked that bad.
We were kids, we didn't know what we were doing.
I mean, the first Ace Ventura is really good. It's very adult.
It's very funny. another thing.
Anyways,
I think what it just. I think the argument.
I think we've exhausted this Metavoy storyline.
No, hold on. It's two things. I think the reason he's freaked out, he already has kids that he doesn't see. So he's like, I don't want to create more kids that I have nothing.
So then he should be used to it.
It's.
What's another notch on the ignoring kids bench post, you know? A belt loop, whatever.
Towards his, the end of the episode, he rolls up to Abby's, desk, and he awkwardly says to her, Abby, I'll be happy to give...
Wanna fuck?
No. He goes, Abby, I'll be happy to give you my sperm to you and Kathy. And she goes, okay.
Who's the one that's gonna be pregnant? Is it...
Abby.
Is it Abby? Oh, it's Abby. So my rule, my criteria would be you're gonna have my sperm, but you gotta take it the old-fashioned way.
And then that's when the guitar riff sting comes in.
Yep. And then you get some moonlight...
Son of a bitch!
And then it could be like a Chasing Amy storyline. Well, maybe Metavoy's D is so good that it turns her back to being straight.
Yeah, that's exactly what would happen. She'd get some of that Metavoy dick and her sexual orientation would flip. No, it's...
Maybe it's the ginger in his penis that makes her turn back to being straight.
The ginger in his penis.
It's the red hair or something. What's, like the dandruff is different or something. I don't know.
What's also awkward is he says, hey, you can have my sperm. It's cool. And she says, okay, well, you're going to have to get a cup and you're going to have to jerk off and you can do it in any men's room. I want to say something. I'm not comfortable jerking off in any men's room. Like, just any men's room in existence. It's not something I'm totally cool with.
Well, I mean, not any men's room, but like most men's rooms. I feel like
What's your quality of restroom you have to jerk off in it, Kyle? It has to be clean.
Like a porta potty? No way. That's not happening. Smell alone, not happening. Subway restroom? No way. Say Nordstrom's restroom? Maybe.
Nordstrom's? What about Nordstrom Rack?
Oh, hell no. That's the cheap end.
So, yeah, he then freaks out and leaves, but it's established he's going to give him... He's going to give him the man juice.
The juice. He's going to give him the juice.
He's going to give him that ginger juice. That JG.
His juice is loose.
JG.
His juice is loose.
The end of the episode has to do with Bobby. He gets brought into a meeting by some FBI agents who mention that they're with Joey Salvo.
Because of the guy he knows, right?
Yeah, Joey Salvo is the dude from the neighborhood that's now a stick-up guy. And these FBI agents have been working on him for about 5 months. And they want Simone to do a small favor for him to see what he asks.
They basically want him to work for him, but not get like any of the credit or anything.
And Simone doesn't really want to do it, and he makes that pretty clear by his reaction to the request. And the guy makes two really big cracks at him, says, I guess you're not as smart as the cop everyone says you are, when he makes a joke about, what, you want me to be a wheelman for a robbery? And then Simone says, I'll have to talk to my boss about it, and the FBI guy goes, oh, so you mean Detective Russell.
That's kind of a good slam.
Because I think, and Simone figures out quick that he's going to use their relationship as a... blackmail.
Leverage.
Yeah, to say, well, I might just get you canceled because the chief of D's wants you to do it. It's an awkward sitch. He tells Fancy he doesn't really want to do it, and Fancy says, I could deal with the chief of D's if you don't want to do it. And Simone says he just wants some time to think about it. The last scene of the episode is one of the weirdest ending scenes because Simone's on a bed with a sleeveless shirt and no pants on. Russell comes up and starts rubbing his ass cheeks. And he kind of shrugs it off, and she's like, oh, 20 minutes of foreplay for nothing then? And so it's like, okay, so you guys were starting to get down in the bathroom, I guess? And
hey, whatever, bro.
And they start making out, and then she goes, no, let's do this legit. Tell me what happened in the fucking office with those FBI dudes. He runs down the request and then tells a story about Joey Salvo getting into a fight with a guy named Timmy. And then after he loses the fight, he bashed Timmy's head in with a baseball bat that night. And the kid died 6 months later and was living in a wheelchair and having seizures and shit. And she's like...
So he should have went to jail.
So he's a murderer. And she's like, wow, that's pretty tough. And he's like, yeah, it's going to be tough. And then they start making out, and she's like, I don't know if you... You don't have to do this if you don't want to. And he's like, what are you talking about? There's nothing more I want to do. And then they start fucking. And it's just Cinemax softcore pornography. And this is another one of those NYPD Blue situations where it's like, he just told you about a murder.
Yeah, but that got him all riled up and hopped up. And got her all hopped up, because they were vulnerable together.
It was very weird. Because I have not had many experiences like this, but I can't imagine a woman being like, okay, so before we get down, tell me about what happened. And then I tell them something really fucked up and uncool, and then she's like, okay, let's get back to the fucking. Like, it doesn't add up to me.
No, it just seems like, it's like, that's what their relationship does. Their relationship is about, instead of dealing with, like, their trauma, they just, like, oh, let's fuck.
This is
like, it's basically what it seems like.
And this is also the woman that, after admitting she was molested as a child, just went back to work.
Yeah.
Just went back to work the next day after having like severe anxiety attacks.
Was totally cool. Like, I'm good. I'm all good. No problem.
Hey,
all gravy.
Got it out of my system. Ready to go to work. Where's my gun?
Yeah, I got that molestation out of my system. We're good.
Well, that's a good time to head over to our next episode. Every single episode of NYPD Blue Balls is on AstroBlessPodcast.com, iTunes, Stitcher, where you find a podcast. We're on Instagram at Asher Brothers Podcast, Twitter at Asher Bros Pod, and we are there to talk about the show. And by we, I mean me, Kirk. Kyle does not run our social media.
Yeah, no one has any questions for me, so I'm good.
Wow. Apparently, words have disappeared.
What was that? They've got it.
I've relayed information to you from things they've said.
Yeah, when it's been important shit, we've taken care of it.
Anything else you want to say about this episode before we are done with bad rap?
Check for my album, The Rebirth of Daddy Cool. It's coming out in 2 months on SoundCloud.
You can get the single.
It's where all the rappers put their music, right?
Yeah, you can get
all the good rappers. All the good rappers put their music up for free, right? Is that what this generation's taught me?
That's what I've been told. Or they give them out in CDs on the street in Hollywood.
Yeah, is that what Chance the Rapper taught me?
Your single is out right now. Kiss My Black Ass.
It's called Clean Your Butthole and You'll See Red.
Later, everybody.
Thank you once again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls and being patient for this one to come out. What had happened was the entire recording disappeared after I recorded it, and it took some time to find it in the files and whatnot and then edit it. I procrastinated a bit to release that episode last week, and it bit me in the ass. So I apologize for that, and thank you for listening now. If you need more NYPD Blue information in your life, there's always the books out there, Gene Kendall's Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue. There's True Blue, written about the first couple seasons. There's What Would Sipowicz Do?, a collection of articles written about the show. There's tons of stuff out there. If you need NYPD Blue, the show itself, you can always check out Hulu. It has every single episode streaming, as well as Amazon Prime streaming. Both of those services have every single episode of the best show ever. Please rate and review the podcast. It'll help it get seen in the algorithm. And then, more importantly, people might actually go watch the best show ever, NYPD Blue.